From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, May the 10th, 2011. Every week, this podcast brings you the news that shapes the geospatial industry, location-based information technology, and all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
And this is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Today's topic is how remote sensing has gone mainstream. From the media's love affair with satellite technology to Esri's Change Matters that does a lot of the work for image analysts, we'll explore the popularization of Earth-observing satellite technology, visualization, and image analysis. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. You can now access ArcGIS on your Microsoft Windows Phone 7 device. Download the free app from the Zune Marketplace. For more information, visit esri.com/windowsphone.
Adina, the media loves satellite imagery and Google Earth in particular. You can't tell a story unless you tried out the satellite image. The news coverage of the capture of Osama bin Laden essentially began with the release of a digital globe image of his compound. In fact, the series of images that I saw were very detailed and annotated with the compound infrastructure, the wall heights, the length, all of this providing context to the story. And now we expect stories to be enhanced by the inclusion of some location-based information. How important do you think it is that remotely sensed imagery has become to reporting stories? How unique is this now that we believe that the average citizen is quite familiar with the visual context afforded by commercial satellite and oblique aerial imagery?
Well, I think it absolutely has gone mainstream. Once people got their hands on Google Maps, and that's been around now for 6 years, and Google Earth falling right on the heels of that, they played with it, they found their houses, they now know how to use it to get a sense of where to park, if they're going to the big game. So they've actually got an awful lot of understanding from, in a sense, just playing around with it in their day-to-day lives, such that when something like this happens, you show them the picture and they know what to look for. You know, they know how to distinguish pavement and grass and walls and understand how shadows work. I mean, they may not have thought about this, and certainly most people on the planet have not taken any kind of formal instruction, but they've learned as they've jumped in to just take advantage of this imagery.
Right, right. And while simplistic, location told us to ask some very obvious questions when we analyze the imagery from the Osama bin Laden capture. And it was a really big story on most of the major news media coverage, and that was, why didn't the Pakistanis know, or did they, about this compound? It asked a very essential location question. Here we have the Pakistani military's quote-unquote West Point, 3,000 meters away, and they didn't know. So this availability of imagery, location, technology, and whatnot became an essential part of the story.
It did, and while I agree that that question, specifically in the context that you just put it, was widely reported and widely asked in the media, I can only speak for myself. I did not see a map that showed where bin Laden's compound was with reference to that school. Did you?
No, I didn't either. That's very true.
Okay, so I'm going to use that as a beginning point for another set of questions, which are these. How did we look at the information that we had? That is, how did the readers of these different media outlets' stories look at the information? And that goes back to exactly how those media outlets framed those images. And what I saw was they zoomed right in on the compound, right? I saw several discussions and articles of this is how that patch of land looked in 2004, and here's how it looked once the complex was built.
Right.
Right, little change detection, you get side-by-side images.
Right.
And interestingly, all of the versions of that I saw, the two images were not aligned in the same way so that it was easy to compare where the compound was.
Right. I think one appeared to be north-facing, the other south-facing. Yeah, right. They were not juxtaposed exactly the same.
Which I found that gave me pause. Why not? We certainly have tools to rotate things so they match. And they did have, to their credit, they did have outlined the sort of triangular shape of the compound. So why not go the rest of the way and match them up the way a real image analyst would and make it even easier to make that comparison?
Yeah, that's a very good question. Yeah, they didn't do that. They didn't take it far enough. And I think that may relate to the sophistication of the news outlet to understand exactly what can be done with imagery or how a map should be prepared, north arrow, whatever, scale bar, that type of thing.
Right. There's certainly a ways to go in terms of how that's portrayed. And maybe there's a good answer to this question that I'm asking, and we just don't know what it is. Now, the other thing that was really interesting is that you saw these very detailed images of the inside of the compound, and they talked about the pacer and how they could track this individual walking around for hours on end and so forth, and they determined that it was a very tall person from the imagery, and that it was, the theory was, well, that must be Bin Laden because he's very tall. All good stuff, all valuable to educate the public on how we use these images. And I think people were really enthralled by the detail of the images, not just because we could have the detail of the images, but because it really created a connection with this individual that we've heard about and we've been worried about for so long, and we got a sense of the place where he lived. It put it to a human scale. You saw the walls. You saw the different levels. I mean, it had a you just were enthralled with, oh my goodness, I'm walking into this guy's house like Better Homes and Gardens,
right?
In a sense. Now, I want to suggest that those images of the inside of the compound may be what is standing proxy for that other set of images that many people want to see, which is of a shot up Bin Laden. Well, we're not going to get those, at least not right now, but we have this other set of information that brings us that kind of closeness to this situation. And I think people were fascinated by those. What they were not fascinated by, and what the media didn't follow up on, as you suggested, is pulling out a bit. Let's put this compound in context with the rest of the neighborhood and with the rest of the cities in the country. The main thing I think people know about Abbottabad is that it is how many kilometers outside of Islamabad? I don't even remember now.
Yeah, it was like 120K.
Right. But what other places are within that kind of distance? And what else is nearby? And so we didn't get to have that kind of geographic analysis, in part because I think we were so fascinated by the personal scale imagery.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. It's true. We never saw a map of Abbottabad with respect to Rawalpindi, Islamabad. Yeah, I would have appreciated that because I've been to Pindi and Islamabad, and I didn't exactly know exactly where it was, you know, with respect to those two cities. I want to bring up one thing that you had mentioned, because you had mentioned about the pacer. There was a disconnect in the media. Commercial imagery did not show the pacer, and we did not know that the pacer was 6'4", based on commercial satellite imagery. I was taken aback by one of the things that we'll post to the show notes about a Fox News reporter talking to a CIA analyst about seeing the man supposed to be Bin Laden walking in the compound. How dumb does the military or media think we are that we can't tell the height of a man with commercial satellite imagery? What was really funny, I'm sure these were satellites by the National Reconnaissance Office, and all this weekend, I thought the juxtaposition was keen. They're showing the movie Body of Lies. This is starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Russell Crowe about what else? Counterterrorism in the Middle East. And one of the main things that will get people jazzed in this movie is the shot of an NRO satellite zooming right into Leonardo DiCaprio from space in the middle of a bazaar.
In real time.
In real time, exactly, exactly. And so we're all wondering, gee, how did they know that this man was 6'4"? And you got to you can't tell me that they did not know that this was positive evidence of bin Laden, knowing that the sophistication and the satellite resolution that we have at the NRO is pretty darn good. In fact, when I was doing remote sensing back in the 80s, we were always told that the spook agencies could see the size of a cigarette box from space. So, yeah, it was interesting juxtaposition for me.
Right. Well, and that's another opportunity for the media to help explain and educate the public by saying, now the images that you know of that you see in Google Earth are commercial and they're public and they're at thus and such resolution. Right. But the tools that the government was using were better.
Yeah.
And right. I have to believe they had aerial imagery. I mean, they had a whole lot more tools and images than what we're looking at, which are from the commercial satellites. And they didn't. I agree. And that conversation was disconcerting to me as well.
It never happened. Well, it never happened on any of the media channels to discuss the sophistication of our spy satellites. Maybe that was by design.
Well, and I think a lot of that, part of the challenge here was that this whole media cycle was so compressed.
Mm-hmm.
Because it happened on a Sunday. The news story broke on a Sunday night, East Coast time.
Right.
And then everybody had to cram in and get the story out, get the pictures out, get the maps of the compound out, all that stuff. And it took some time. In fact, I was listening to NPR over the last couple of days, and finally they had John Pike on talking about the actual – somebody who actually knows what they're talking about.
Right.
So it took time to find those folks to get the story straight. I think – like much of the story that was revised several times, the technology story is also going to be revised several times.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Now, there's one other thing I want to say before we leave this topic. And again, I think this comes into that fascination with the compound itself. There is already a fan-made game map of the compound. And you can play either the folks going in to get bin Laden or bin Laden himself, and the visuals of it are just stunning from the article that I saw, and there's a link to that in the show notes.
Yeah, and we could go into a whole other discussion of computer models, building information models of that compound, I'm sure.
Right, and sure those are popping up even now, and from what I understand, they actually built,
mock-up.
Was it a physical model?
I believe it was, yes.
Right, to prepare for the attempt, yeah, that was...
Right. Right, and not to beat a dead horse, but those measurements of the infrastructure came from very sophisticated satellites. Let's change gears a little bit here, because I do want to discuss another matter with regard to remote sensing. That is a portal released by Esri called Change Matters. It's a collection of the USGS Landsat Satellite Image Library. There are two elements to this portal, the side-by-side processed imagery. These are a standard combination of spectral bands that have been selected to show land cover features. This imagery has been classified already. It's based on typical combinations of anyone viewing these data can interpret the land features by understanding the legend that they place at the bottom of the images and then looking for like features on the actual image itself. It also includes a separate panel that includes the Normalized Difference Vegetation Index, the NDVI. The NDVI is the reflectance difference that green vegetation displays between visible region and the near-infrared of the electromagnetic spectrum. Adina, what does this support, and how do you think it will be used, and maybe why didn't somebody like the USGS do this first? I think it's a great portal. I love looking at the stuff that they've done, but I'm wondering what type of applications this is going to support and what was maybe Esri's reason for doing it.
Well, there's sort of two things going on here, I think. One is, let's get the Landsat imagery, which is available and out there, but not available in an image service, and serve it up. So that's the first thing that ESRI had to do. Part two was, let's build this tool to do this sort of change detection and make it as simple as finding your geography of interest, grabbing the two images from the two different time frames, and then getting that difference. So the making the imagery more available is really what's been going on across the board in the commercial sector. Because let's face it, that's what Google did, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, all that commercial imagery from Digital Globe and GOI and all those great maps from Navtech and TomTom have been available. But to put them together in this really easy-to-use global tool that raised the knowledge base of the planet, as we just talked about, you know, just jumped up hugely in the past 7 or 8 years. And I think this is, in a sense, the logical progression of that movement. Let's do the same thing with this publicly available imagery, which really probably isn't used to its fullest extent, because it still takes some energy to get the images you want and then to get the software. You've got to know a lot, for sure. And this jumps that up to this sort of Google Maps level, if you like.
Right. Absolutely. What it has done is unlocked a lot of the imagery that has been kept inside the archives for so long. And while it has been available, the next step was never done. That is the classified image, the availability to see natural color versus infrared versus the change detection. These are things that take time. And if you're not familiar with image analysis and image classification, you wouldn't know how to do it. Well, here you've provided with the imagery, the legend, which unfortunately leaves a little bit to be desired in my estimation.
And let's be very clear here. You have great amount of experience in remote sensing, and I took the one course I had to take in graduate school, and I don't know much at all, and I was disappointed, is a generous term, with the tools to help me understand what was going on with the legends. I think to get back to your original question, which is what's going to happen with this? Well, the first thing that has to happen is ESRI and the planet need to put together some tools to guide people to use even these tools, which granted make it far easier than starting from scratch, but you still need some guidance.
Well, there's a level of assumption here made by Esri that everybody understands what a natural image versus an infrared image look like, even to the experienced or even to the educated GIS user. Why is in one picture this red more vibrant than another? What is it telling me about the vibrant nature of the vegetation? By looking at the legend, the example images of Mount St. Helens, which I'm not sure is said anywhere by.
I knew what it was too, and I was very proud of myself. But I had the same reaction. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and so I'm looking at this, and if I look at the legend, I'm classifying the volcanic crater as urban, and there's some work that needs to be done here.
Right, and let's be fair, ESRI announced this back in January at the Federal User Conference, and I know a lot of people have been working really hard to get it done and get it out so that they could announce it at ASPRS last week.
Right.
So I think a lot of these supporting materials must be in the works, and as I've indicated, the education corner of ESRI is so excited about this, and rightly so, and I think they're going to be really the leaders in taking this and getting the appropriate tools out to the general public and the education public of how we can take advantage of this. Now, how are we going to measure how effectively this new tool is being used? One way, I think, is going to be to see if it is, in fact, referenced and used in the media.
Well, that's a good point.
Okay, will those same folks who were playing around with the images of Bin Laden's compound and using it to support that story, will they know when to take advantage of this toolkit and how to represent it and how to interpret it and then how to get those pictures into the story? Because with all the discussion of census data and movement of people around and climate change and flooding in the Midwest, we have all kinds of opportunities here in the U.S. and worldwide to take advantage of this kind of a toolkit.
Let me quote something from Jack Dangerman that was presented in the introductory video to Change Matters. And he says, Change Matters will, and I quote, invoke the ability for anyone to be able to do rather sophisticated analytics in simple to use browsers. I think that's a great goal. I think they're at the first stage of getting people to do that. But to your point about whether the media will jump from a simple natural color image of bin Laden's compound to doing change detection of vegetation to support a story on global warming, that's a really big leap. I don't know.
But don't we want that?
We absolutely do. So now we're going to have to educate a crop of reporters to understand how to interpret an NDVI image and what is it telling you, and give me the time frame and why does it matter over this time frame. So there's a little bit more education that has to happen, because
absolutely
seeing,
and educating those reporters and those smart technologists who are working with GIS in the media already isn't so different from educating high schoolers or community college students or college students. So the tools that ESRI puts out and the seminars that it gives are, I think, will be by almost, they just sort of have to be, accessible to and in support of all of those different kinds of people.
And I absolutely agree, and I think this is a great first step for Esri to do this. And so take this as constructive criticism and feedback to that organization. And that's exactly what it should be used for, is educating a new crop of students and reporters and whatnot.
Right. And let me make a prediction. Within the next 6 months, a year, there will be a contest for students to do an analysis using this tool that ESRI puts forward.
That'd be a great first step. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Our sponsor, Esri, would like to remind you that the File Geodatabase API, now in beta, is available for download from the ArcGIS Resource Center. This free API allows you to develop apps that interact with a file geodatabase without using ArcObjects. For more information and to download, visit www.esri.com/file GDB API. That's FileGDB API. If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com or leave a comment in the comment box where this podcast is posted. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.